Welcome to Weekly Winners. This is episode 5. I am Jer here with Cody. It's finally feeling real. NFL training camp starting. Got to get those first few storylines of the year. Obviously, the big one is Rodgers showing up. The t-shirt, the sunglasses, the flow. Holding nothing back with the media. Looks like it's the one last year.
Yeah. I mean, unless Green Bay can do something drastic to make him want to stay. It's kind of looking like it's the last year.
Yeah, big part of his negotiations to play this year is getting Randall Cobb, trading for them. He's coming back. I didn't even see the details on that deal. I can't imagine it really cost that much. I'm sure
probably a fifth or something. Right?
The Texans were just happy to not pay him $8 million this year.
And right.
That obviously comes with the restructuring. The Packers aren't going to pay him that either. But yeah, we've kind of been beating this dead horse for a few weeks talking about will he, won't he with Rodgers. But yeah, lines moved all over the place with their Super Bowl, their NFC odds, even the division odds. They're even more of a heavy favorite now. So yeah, kind of what we expected would happen if he announced he was staying.
So I didn't even look. Did they release a team total yet?
It was bouncing all over the place.
Okay.
I can take a look if it's out there, but yeah, I mean, the Packers really kind of, and they had to, but really kind of bet in the knee to them, giving them the option to be out after the year, like, which surprised me. It didn't seem like they were going to do that based on all of their actions before that, but
right.
Rodgers really feeling like he needed them to commit to him over the next couple of years, which is like, you know, you had 2 years left on the contract. Like, you aren't going to be turning 40 on the steal. Like, I know you just won the MVP, but not everyone's Tom Brady.
Right.
I'm seeing here 10.5 for the over-under.
10.5?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they got any worse team-wise from last year. I guess it all depends if Rodgers can replicate.
Right, and they're all the way up to down to minus 200 to win the division. We've seen, I mean, there's kind of been both sides. We've seen a lot of guys, especially Devontae, speaking up and saying, like, he's kind of standing with Aaron through this. And there's also guys that are kind of like Bakhtiari, like this kind of a slap in the face to the rest of the team. Like,
right. And I don't know. I'm sure like Rodgers and Bakhtiari, especially, they'll get things sorted out. I mean, Rodgers has got to make amends with his starting tackle. Right. I mean, you can't have any grudges.
It'll be pretty obvious week one if they don't make amends there.
Right.
No, but kind of the next leading story coming out of training camp. Xavien Howard wants out of Miami.
Yeah, I'll be curious. It sounds like the Cardinals, the Saints, and one other team, I forget who, but they're kind of the front runners to go get him.
Yeah, I saw they didn't say who, but they said regardless of who the front runners and two playoff teams reached out day one with like offers. Like, that's how you know a guy hitting the market like that is the real deal. I mean, what team really wouldn't want him?
Right. And I think it I mean, I think it comes with, or that's because of the fact that he's just not making as much money as what his market value is.
I know, but like, maybe if there was like some indication from the team that he wasn't going to get that kind of money after this contract, but like, I don't know, is trading, getting traded now fix that?
No. Yeah. Not unless, like you said, there's some indication that he wouldn't go get that money. But.
Right. But even then, he could just leave in free agency for the money he thinks he deserves. But
right.
I don't know. Something must be up with that Dolphins organization. Because, I mean, it was the fire sale for them a couple years ago. Like, everyone wanted out of there, and everyone was getting out of there. And then they had such a quick turnaround, just building back to missing the playoffs, but missing the playoffs with a very respectable record last year. Like, a good team again, but still, guys just don't want to play there right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, keep an eye on where he goes, where those talks go. I can't imagine it's very long before he gets dealt. I sure wouldn't say no if he wants to team up with Minka Fitzpatrick again, but
yeah,
I doubt that.
I did see a rumor that the Cardinals offered Chandler Jones and a first, which almost seems low, yeah, in my opinion, with how old Jones is.
He feels like a – it does kind of feel somewhere between one and two firsts. Obviously, it matters who those firsts are from.
Right.
The market for an elite corner was kind of set with two firsts. So I wouldn't be surprised to see – the Dolphins get that for him, but
I think it'd be more like Chandler Jones, a first and like a second or third on top. I mean, right. Chandler Jones is,
yeah, that's not
mid 30s. I mean,
right. That's not, he wouldn't fetch a first round pick on his right. own right now. Probably not even a second, really.
No. But yeah. Again, I just saw that, scrolling through Twitter. I know it was a verified account, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't remember how reputable the guy was. Mm-hmm.
And the last thing coming out of training camp, don't know if it'll really come into effect, but Dak wasn't really practicing.
Yeah, I guess when was his timetable?
I think set. They thought he was going to be back, but like everything was like on schedule. Like, he's doing good, which was, I think, kind of surprising to everybody because it was like, I mean, everyone saw that injury and it looked so bad. But
yeah,
I mean, concerning, obviously, after that kind of visual, like trotting him up, if like he can't have a full training camp and then like trotting him out there like week one, like. I mean, maybe he's just back to his, you know, ways where he's killing it before he got hurt, but got to be a little worried if you're a Cowboys fan.
Yeah, I don't even remember that injury was so long ago. I don't remember the timetable that was even set after the surgery. Like, hey, you know, he'll probably miss training camp, but should be good to go week one or like week two of preseason or something.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to go back and see what they said.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm also, with a guy like that, do you think they'll play him more during the preseason?
It could go either way. It could be like, hey, because we need to get him back in game shape. Like, let's play him for the first half of all three games. Or it could just be like, we ain't risking his health for a nothing game.
Right. And that's why I almost liked it better last year. Because there was no preseason, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's as excited, and you'll hear me talk every episode about something with football, how excited I am for the season to come. And I love it. I still don't really even watch preseason. It just is nothing. It doesn't
If I was an NFL coach, if there is any job that it's like, okay, this is your job, they are not touching the field. I mean, as a Packer fan, we've seen Jordy Nelson tear his ACL or MCL or something.
Two Pro Bowlers a season that are going to suffer serious injuries during the Pro Bowl or during the
right.
preseason.
And it's just not worth it.
No. And that, so that's kind of what I got for NFL, but I figured I'd mention, as football season is coming up, we're very nearly into August here. Once we do get into NFL, we will be having a little bit of fantasy football talk on the show. We both have several leagues that we're in that we could talk about. But if any of you guys are interested, tweet at us, DM us on Twitter at WeeklyWinnersWI. If you'd be interested in hopping in a Weekly Winners Fantasy Football League, it'll kind of be a first come, first serve basis. And if we get enough interest on that, we'll make that league and kind of that'll be the main league that we center our talks around. And we'll come up with something for the winner. Maybe you get 60 seconds on the pod to gloat about your fantasy football prowess. But yeah, we'll come up with something. Just shoot us a line on and really any of our social media. And yeah, first come, first serve on that. I do want to get into MLB and NBA as we got a bit to get to. But I'd be remiss if I didn't quickly touch on the greatest athlete of their sport kind of quitting, probably not going to be back. And that would be Simone Biles in the Olympics. Walked out on the team competition. Next day, walked out on the all-around singles competition. And when I first saw this and kind of her reasoning for all of it, I didn't think I'd really see a lot of hate online for it. But it was there, and she has coverage like no gymnast ever really has before, all the commercials and all the lead up to these Olympics. But fact of the matter is, this is a sport that is dominated by very young competitors, because their brains aren't yet developed enough to tell them, hey, this is way too dangerous for me to be doing.
Right.
And she's just reached the point, she's 24 now, that she's at that. She kind of has this mental block. I've never heard of this before, but the twisties being thrown out, like that's a thing that happens to gymnasts, where it's kind of like you get like the yips in baseball or something, or you're just go on a cold streak. It's like, for whatever reason, middle of the season, this guy who plays third base can't pull the trigger on throwing it to first for a couple games. Like, something just happens. And I saw a clip where she was going up to do, like, I don't know any of the terminology of gymnastics, but she was going off the pommel horse to do, like, a triple spin and flip or something. And she, like, lost her where she was in the air. Like, you could tell she just didn't, like, at that, I couldn't imagine how scary that must be to be halfway upside down and not know which way is up or down. And she ends up like finding it, completing, bailing on the third spin, completing the two spins in the flip, and still landing it. And I'm like, that, like, to have the skill to do that, like, it's all mental health stuff. It's completely understandable, in my opinion. She has the quote saying that because she's the last girl left in the organization from the Larry Nassar era, she feels like it's on her. She's going to this Olympics, because if she didn't, that would kind of be the end of the talks and everything would be kind of over and they wouldn't be held responsible for it anymore. And that, on top of all of the pressure in the world, where everyone in the entire world expected her to win the gold, like that on top of it, like, I don't know if any athlete's ever been under more pressure.
Yeah. And I think another thing to touch on about her is just the fact that I believe during the qualifiers, when they got to Tokyo, she had performed like three routines or whatever you call it. Again, I'm not a gymnastics expert, but three routines that have like never been done before. And she doesn't get scored this thing. They score her because they expect her to do that stuff now. Like that expectation's there, where like you just gotta score as you'd score anyone else. Like,
and on top of all of the stuff I touched on before, there's like the scoring system. It's like you can have your opinions on whether it's fair or not, like how they, because she scored completely differently, like whether she gets enough credit for doing things that other girls aren't even allowed to attempt. You have, and I won't read the quotes here, but you have just horrible quotes from like other countries' coaches touching on how she's favorably judged because of her race and how their team would be better if they were black. And that, on top of everything else she's already dealing with, I think I'm just out on gymnastics as a sport. Put all these pressure on these young competitors, and then you treat them so horribly, and it's so insanely dangerous to begin with. I think I'm just out on it as a sport.
Well, and that's the thing. I think the average age of someone in women's gymnastics is like 17.1 or something.
Right.
Like, could you imagine some coach talking to a 17-year-old girl like that? Like,
right.
And it's like Simone Biles is old. Like, she is old, and she's 24.
It's the complete context of the sport. Like, if there's an NBA star, or NFL star, more specifically, like, say this guy does 3 years at college, comes out, he's in, like, his second year in the league, and he's, you know, got his new money, and he's out, you know, getting, like, disturbing the peace charges and stuff because he's out late partying too late. Everyone's going to be like, oh, yeah, he's 24, he's a kid, he just got all this money, like, you know, he's still a kid, like, he'll figure it out. Because she's in this age, and she's 24, she's expected to have all the poise and all the wisdom of a veteran of the sport, when a veteran of the sport is someone who's been doing it professionally for, like, 6 years. And all these girls, they sacrifice so much to, like, hopefully have one run at the Olympics when you're, like, 17, 18, 19, and then you're done. Crazy how fast it can burn out. And yeah, I don't see how it could be. Yeah. Like I said, just kind of out on the sport. Doesn't feel worth it to me, especially if you're going to have to get treated that way.
Right.
But onto a little bit of a lighter subject. We have the richest podcast listeners of the world, or at least we should, if they were to listen to me and fade my baseball picks. I'm losing at least a half unit, a unit, unit and a half every single day. I'm simply giving away money. I'll keep the integrity. I keep betting these picks. I keep losing the money. Because if I got a little cheeky with it, and I'll be like, oh, I'll give out these picks on the show, and then I'll bet the other side. No, then the picks would still win, and I don't know what happened. But I'm keeping the integrity. I'm betting these terrible, terrible baseball picks so that you, the people, can keep making money. I think as of today, I'm down like 4.5 units on the year, which is really a blown lead. So what do you do when you need to climb out of a hole? I already tried betting like every game on the board. I decided, let's get a little crazy with it. The Brewers are playing the Pirates. They've blown them out in every single game this series. It's been very embarrassing for the Pirates. I think their most narrow, the narrowest margin of victory was like 4, and that was like last night. So what am I doing? Brewers -3.5 at the Pirates, +235. They finish them off. They blow them out again. Big win for the Brewers. And I get back in my winning ways. I'm also going Yankees -1.5 at the Rays. That's +115. I'm going White Sox at Royals -9.5. That's even odds +100. And I'm going Blue Jays +101 at Red Sox. That one's pretty much a pick 'em.
Yeah. So I'm running today. Let me look here. Doing Giants -1.5. Home against the Dodgers. I'm doing the Blue Jays -1.5 at the Red Sox. I'm riding the hot hand. Tigers coming out of the All-Star break have just been, I mean, the hottest team in baseball.
I mean, they just came off that game with the Twins. They won like 17-14.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I had two units on them winning by – or two units on them -1.5. And it was like 14-6 or something. I'm like, oh, it's in the bag. It's the seventh or eighth
inning. I had a -1, and I was tuned in earlier in the game, and they were up like 8-1 or something. And then the Twins hit a grand slam. I'm like, there's no way they're blowing this right now. But no, they held on. But yeah.
So I'm taking that -1.5 home against the Orioles at +120. And then finally, I'm going to run with the Mets -1.5 home against the Braves at +143.
Yeah, so keeping with the MLB, we're going to kind of roll into some trade deadline talk. Obviously, hopefully our hometown Brewers got Eduardo Escobar. Hopefully he can contribute some of those 4 runs I need over the Pirates tonight. But kind of break it down. We saw obviously Joey Gallo getting dealt already to the Yankees, just adding more power to a power heavy lineup.
Yeah. And I guess kind of looking ahead here, I think the biggest thing we're going to want to look at is the Cubs. I mean, that's the team everyone has probably seen the most of in terms of trade rumors. Mm-hmm. I think a week ago there was like 6 or 7 guys that the Cubs pretty much came out and said, yeah, they're on the block, like just gutting the squad. So I personally think there's two stars that'll be staying. I think Anthony Rizzo and I think Javi Baez. I don't think the market on Baez is what it once was. Mm-hmm. I think if they were going to deal him, it should have been 2 or 3 years ago when,
yeah,
you know, there was a little bit of MVP talk. Because, I mean, 22 home runs, but 130 strikeouts this year already. I mean,
dealt with injury issues this year. Did just have a sweet walk-off coming into pinch hit against the Cardinals a couple nights ago. But,
right,
yeah, not a guy you'd hope to be having to come in just a pinch hit at this point in the season.
Yeah, so I think he's here to stay. Anthony Rizzo, the really only likely destination for him, in my opinion, would be the Red Sox, but I just don't see – I don't think the Red Sox need it. But the two that I do think are going is Craig Kimbrel and Chris Bryant. Kimbrel – I think he'll be a Dodger. Dodgers are the only team over the, it's like the competitive something tax, basically a luxury tax.
Yeah, the fake luxury tax.
Yeah. So yeah, the Dodgers are the only team above it, and I'm thinking they're just going to go even more above it because the owner's willing to pay. Right. So, but they're, I mean, they're obviously they're the Dodgers. They're balling out this year. Let me just quick pull up. Yeah, they're 62-41. Granted, that's only second in the division because right. the Giants are having an unprecedented season.
Blew them out last night, though. Dodgers just kind of started making their run at it.
But the Dodgers have given up the second most runs in the league in the ninth inning or later. So the only thing they really need is that X-factor closer. Granted, I don't think Kimbrel is an X-factor, but he's got a 0.49 ERA with just two blown saves. Mm-hmm. So
they could use him.
Yeah. I did see that the Sox, Astros, and Padres were all looking at him as well. But when it comes down to it, the Dodgers are the only team consistently in the MLB willing to give up more money or picks, or because, you know, if the Dodgers just say, hey, we'll throw $3 million on top, no other team would really do that. Mm-hmm. And then looking at Chris Bryant, kind of looks like the Mets, the Rays, and the Giants will be the three kind of looking at him, with the Mets being the front runners. I don't really see the Rays doing it. So the Rays, for better or for worse, have kind of been playing like the early 2000 A's. Mm-hmm. They spend like this, the cap is to the tune of 210 million, and I think the Rays have 58 million of it used.
Yeah,
just an atrocious amount of cap space just waiting to be spent, but the owner just would rather pocket it.
Right, and they can get away with it because their farm system is just consistently incredible. Where they just have cheap talent just walking
in the right. door. And it's like, as a fan, yeah, you made what, a World Series like 4 or 5 years ago, but I would be livid. I mean, right. you're consistently a playoff team and you've got $150 million you can spend to go out and make your team better and your owner won't let it happen.
What if in the middle of the season you're adding that number one prospect, Wander Franco, to a lineup that was already full of sluggers that you were, you know, shelling out at least a little bit of money to, rather than just like, hey, I know we got some solid pieces. Let's pull it up. Like,
and that's the thing. When Wander's contract is up, are they just going to say, see ya?
Probably. I
mean, like,
the farm system for the rest of the MLB.
Right. I just don't understand how the organization just doesn't. I mean, there have been years in the last decade, multiple years, where they've been like one or two pieces away from potentially winning a World Series. Mm-hmm. And each one of those years are $150 million under the cap. It's like
more likely can afford. Yeah, they're more likely to be selling at the deadline than buying.
Yeah, so I think the Mets are going to be the front runners there. Other big names would be Max Scherzer. The thing you do have to remember with Scherzer is that he does have that clause in his contract where he needs to approve the trade. Mm-hmm. It's called like the 10 and 5. It's like 10 years of service, five with the same team. But yeah, so he has already said he won't go to the Astros or the Phillies, two teams that showed a lot of interest, and that he'd pretty much only accept going to a West Coast team, mm-hmm. which realistically, I mean, all the West Coast teams are good enough. I mean, Seattle's having a better year than expected, the A's, the Giants, the Dodgers, and the Padres. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could see... I don't think a team like the Dodgers would need a guy like Scherzer.
No.
That and it's just how far over the cap would you go?
Right.
Because now that would flirt with the territory of them starting to lose draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
And why would you go and do that when your starting five rotation is just fine?
Right.
Yeah, I guess that's it for like super popular names. I know yesterday, the A's acquired Starling Marte.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll give the A's a nice little boost. And that's another one of those teams where they're already, they're second in the AL West at 57-46. Kind of poised here to make a nice little playoff run.
I will ask, you kind of do see the third or fourth team mentioned with a lot of these guys is the Giants. Do you think it's even because obviously they've got that slight lead on the Dodgers in the division. Do you think it's even possible they make moves that will keep them winning that division? Or do you think the Dodgers are kind of destined to catch up?
I think, I think it's the Dodgers division if they go out and get Kimbrel.
Mm-hmm.
There's been quite a bit of games this year where late in the game, it's like the Dodgers were winning by one and, oh, now we're going to extras because our closer gave up a run.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and lose the game in extras. And so I think the Dodgers getting Kimbrel would kind of mess up my World Series pick as well. Padres.
Likely, but...
I just don't know how the Dodgers don't go back to back. That's just such a complete.
Mm-hmm. That's the
type if they can.
It's the tightrope they walk where they have all the money and they're willing to spend it, where their team is obviously good enough to go back to a World Series. It was at the beginning of the year, just with the superstar, the star potential they have at, pitching and hitting. So, but they're expected to. So you can't fall short. You can't get bounced in the first round. That's a disappointment. But also, if your team's already good enough to do it, how much more are you going to spend? If it's like we were already good enough to go back to the World Series before we made X, Y, and Z moves.
Yeah. And that's the thing to look at with the Giants. If they could go out and get a guy like Scherzer, then I don't know, because they've got a lot of money to spend. They've got the tune of about $47.7 million before they hit that luxury tax threshold. So I think if the Giants go out and get a guy like Scherzer, that kind of changes things as to whether or not the Dodgers are locked to win the division.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been fun to watch those two teams because the Giants consistently holding like a 2-3 game lead in that division has just been amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, see, everyone thinks Dodgers are catching up, but you kind of see it. It's sometimes, it just takes a game or two here. It's like, yeah, Dodgers, they're playing well. They, just won their series 2-1, but Giants had a cupcake. They swept them 3-0. They're just kind of staying a few ahead. All of a sudden, you're looking up. The Dodgers are still 2.5 games back, and there's 5 games left. You're like, well, looks like the Giants might hold on here.
Yeah. And I don't know. I mean, I talked about it in the first episode that I expected the Giants to lose some steam after the All-Star break because it's kind of a fluke. I mean, their team isn't a whole lot different this year versus last year. Obviously, it's baseball. There's going to be changes every offseason. But, like, to go from, you know, I think, third or fourth in the division last year to best record in baseball, like,
right, baseball can kind of just be like that, though. You just
right, you just get a group of guys that get hot for a year, and
It's how it's the team composition. It's sometimes can benefit you to keep guys in the same place for multiple years rather than shipping them here and there.
Right.
And so especially interesting to see how they'll mesh if they bring kind of hired guns in at the.
Yeah. Deadline. I don't know. And that's a whole other train of thought. It's like, do you not bring anyone in?
I don't think you can sell that to your fan base. Like you're having an above average year. Above expected, and it's like, oh, and we're not going like all in on it, like
right. But I don't know, I guess I look at it as you got a group of guys, they're meshing, something, you're doing something right, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of thing.
Bringing in a pitcher like Scherzer is a little different. You're not just, it's just one day in the rotation, you know.
Right.
Pretty easy to implement. Obviously, there's like catcher synergy that you got to kind of work out and stuff, but that's what the regular season's for.
Yeah.
That's what we got. There's the big event tonight. You can see behind me, we got the NBA draft coming in Thursday night. So I went in and kind of looked at the lottery teams. See, who do I like? Kind of looking at other draft mock drafts, seeing what sources are saying, kind of who's expected to go where. And then once you kind of get a little bit later in the lottery, just kind of who I either like for a match with the team or who I think they will take. And then I got some trade talks around the draft and around a couple of the big names as well. So I'll jump right into that. Obviously, the Pistons have the first pick. It's not really a question. They're going Cade Cunningham. It's the name out of Oklahoma State that everyone's been learning more of over this last month, really. Kind of expected he'll play point guard. Really play either guard. You could throw him wherever. He's just very skilled. He kind of separated himself as the obvious first pick in a draft where we went into the kind of college season being like, well, there's kind of like 6 guys that are all kind of interchangeable. He kind of just leapt out that extra bit ahead of everybody else. And it's especially interesting here as we roll into the second pick with the Rockets, where we have these G League players, especially Jalen Green, who I have the Rockets taking second. We kind of knew the G League revelation was coming when they kind of change those rules around, let them actually make some money, let them keep their eligibility going there out of high school. And now we got, no spoilers, but, you know, two guys in the top 10 that are just G League players, which is, I think, really good for the league that they could show that as a viable option for players that don't want to go into college. Which will obviously be interesting for upcoming recruits now that college has some ability to make money off your likeness now as well. But yeah, no, Jalen Green had massive upside as a scorer. kind of fits a young Rockets team and give them a couple of years to develop. The team's not really going to be good for a while, but hopefully you can find a good piece in Jalen Green there. Now this third pick is rumored in trade discussions, especially with the Thunder. The Thunder at 6, the Cavs are at 3. Apparently, the Thunder offered the 6th pick and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the Cavs' 3rd pick. Which, if I'm the Cavs, that is a no-brainer to me. The difference between 3 and 6 is not that drastic, but apparently they were not willing to entertain talks of trading the 3rd pick with the Thunder.
That almost seems like anti what the Thunder are doing.
I mean, but at the same time, they won't have roster space to hold all the draft picks that they have.
I guess
over the next couple of years. Like at one point, there was talks of like how many would it take to just get up to one? Like what if they're right. Pistons, these are our worst ones, but here's 5 first round picks. Like they're from the best teams, but it's 5 first round picks to go from 6 to 1,
Right. Yeah, I don't know. That's just, they don't have roster space for it, but you have to assume a few of those guys won't even be on the roster when those.
I mean, yeah, there's only a couple pieces come. That are must keep at this point. And Shai's one of them. I think he's a really, really good young player. He was so young when he came into the league. He's developed so well. There's something to be said for while he's on the Thunder. Like, a lot of people would be what numbers would he be putting up on even a team that's a little bit more competitive? Like, what if he was on the Spurs or something? Would he still be putting up similar numbers? I kind of think he would. I think he's a really good young player, but I get it. I do like that being said, I have Evan Mobley going to the Cavs at 3. I do really, really like Mobley. I mean, I'd be willing to part with him for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, but he's went to USC. He's 7 feet tall, 215, so a little slight, but that's never really an issue these days. These guys put on weight and keep it on more times than not. He is ready. He will be, the minute he steps in an NBA gym, he's going to be a plus defender, which is more than you could say for a lot of college kids coming into the league. Usually that's the last thing to come. So a guy that can step in and contribute at least on that end right away is kind of a home run. Does it fit the Cavs? Not at all. They have a lot of big men. Jared Allen is probably leaving in free agency. Obviously Kevin Love is still kicking around and they're big man heavy outside of, Garland and Sexton, but you have to think none of those guys are really there long-term and they're trying to get off those contracts. So Mobley will be the big of the future to put with Garland and Sexton. So I really like that pick for the Cavs if that's the direction they decide to go. 4th up, we have the Raptors, and I haven't taken Jalen Suggs here. When I was watching him play for Gonzaga in the tournament, I thought he was going to be the number 2 pick after Cade Cunningham. He's just 6'4", 205, solid frame. He's still 19. He's just ready. He's such a polished athlete. He's great on defense, playmaking, shooting on offense. That's what you get when you take these guys out of the big schools like Gonzaga. They're just ready. They've been ready. They aren't a project. Obviously, they're still big superstar or potential, but they're going to contribute to your team right away. And that's a great pick for the Raptors, who, while they do have a lot of young talent, kind of felt like an off year for them. Feels like with the right moves and coaching that they could turn around and be a playoff team again without making too many moves. So I do like that pick there. Do you think the Raptors, do you think that was a fluke here? Do you think that's kind of what they are now?
No, I do think it was more so of a fluke. Obviously, they're not as good as when, you know, the Claw was there. Like, those days are kind of over where, you know, there's that glimmer of hope to be a NBA champion. Mm-hmm. But I do think they should, especially with the expanded.
Right.
You know, that like the play, like the play-in series or whatever they called it. There's no reason that Toronto team shouldn't have, at the very least, played in a play-in game.
Right. I've never been a Pascal Siakam believer. He had like that 1 year where he's like an all-star starter or something. I was like, I don't really see it here. Like, he's just diet Giannis in every way. Like, similar play styles, but he's not bad on defense, and he's just a tick worse in every category. And he's kind of fallen off from them, but they have enough pieces around them. Well, that's a playoff team. They have the talent of a playoff team.
Yeah, because, I mean, between him and Van Vliet.
OG Anunoby, just
right.
They have skills.
Like,
they still have Lowry. He probably won't be there next year, but they should have made the playoffs last year. I do kind of expect them to this year. But rolling in, fifth pick, Magic. I have him going Scotty Barnes out of FSU. What are the Magic right now? It's hard to tell. Barnes is 6'8", play probably small forward. He's really good defensively, which I would have really liked as a comp with the Magic. Just kind of fits their team chemistry. They're just going to be crazy defensively, but those same pieces aren't there that were there a year or two ago that made them kind of that defensive team. Pairs well with Jonathan Isaac, I suppose. But the skills are there for him to develop a nice three-point shot. It's not quite there yet. But if he can develop it, it's a wing scorer that any team in the league would want on their team. Plays good defense and can shoot it. Potential there. Solid pick. I don't love it for him, but I think it's probably where they will go. And I don't think anyone will say it's a bad pick. Rolling into the Thunder, if they're unable to move up, this is really where it kind of gets a little bit questionable. The top three is really kind of set in stone. Like, the Cavs could go with someone other than Mobley, but most people kind of agree that that top three is. And that top five, I kind of expect to go the way I just said. But six is where I started to be like, we're kind of, paths are kind of diverging here and everyone's kind of on their own. I am going James Bounight out of UConn, 6'5 shooting guard. It's the first OKC pick. They got six picks in this draft. He's really polished. He's ready right now to contribute, which is why I'm surprised to see him linked to the Thunder so heavily. I guess it's kind of a guessing game with the Thunder trying to move up, but they've talked to him. They've worked him out. Like, it seems they're very interested, but the Thunder, if anything, are a team that can take a swing. They're not going to be trying to compete this year, I don't think.
I don't think so either.
Especially if they're putting Shea on the block to be traded. So, puzzling, but it really does seem like that's the direction they're heading. Especially with the next team, the Warriors, who need a guy just like that. If Bounight falls to them, I fully expect them to take him. They have a lot of pressure to compete this year. And a guard who's just very polished and can either play some backup minutes or they can just go small with is absolutely something that would benefit their team right now. But I don't think that they think that he will fall to them because they've been linked to Jonathan Kuminga, forward 6'8", very young, kind of. He's 18 years old still, would kind of be what you think the Thunder would be after. A little bit, a lot bit more of a project, needs to develop a lot, but would make all the sense in the world for it to go Kuminga to the Thunder and then Boo Knight to the Warriors. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like it's going to fall that way. Guys are just going, the Thunder can draft best available, but I think fitting your timeline is sometimes just as important. And it doesn't seem like, maybe they'll surprise me and they'll take Kuminga, but I've got him going to the Warriors. And then we go to the next Magic pick. They're on the board again after taking Scotty Barnes. And I have the first kind of international player coming. It's got the name right. It's Alperen Sengun out of Turkey. He's 18 as well, 6'10". Kind of played some forward overseas. I believe he was the MVP of the Turkey League this year, which, you know, it's, you know, shades of Luka, like any kid that young that can, you know, compete at that level. Obviously, it's, you know, not NBA level competition, but there's grown men in those leagues. Like, if they're right, them being able to dominate like that still says something. All I can say about him is he's the Vucevic replacement. A little bit smaller, can chew it a little bit, strong post game. He's just the Vucevic replacement. There's minutes right there for him to step into that are look very similar. Although Vucevic wasn't really back to the basket that much, but I don't really expect him to be either. He does have the skills to do it there, but post touches just aren't really a thing that happen that often in the NBA anymore. And maybe the Magic are going to, you know, kind of go against the grain with that, but that's the pick. They're pretty heavily linked. It kind of just makes sense for their team, and pretty confident he'll be there. So I think that's where they go. And we're going to the Kings. We're going back stateside from Michigan. They're going to go Franz Wagner, I believe, 6'9", small forward. Another good defensive wing whose star potential will depend on the further development of a three-pointer. The flashes are definitely there, but I really like to look at like free throw percentage when looking to project a three-pointer. Because if rarely a guy that's shooting 85% from the line in college is then unable to translate to be a good shooter in the pros, it's usually a pretty good indicator in my opinion. And the skills, the potential is definitely there, but he's just got to develop that shot. We can then go to I think we're kind of getting into the teams that could be looking to compete this year seriously. And might be looking for more guys that can help them this year rather than long-term projects. But the Grizzlies would be on the clock next, just made that deal with the Pelicans for Bledsoe and Steven Adams. I liked it for the Pelicans, cleared them up a lot of space and got a player in Vucevic who I think is really good, but questionable for the Grizzlies, I thought.
Yeah, that was kind of the take I had as well. I don't know. You take on quite a bit of cap space. And what do you even move in the draft? Is it 17 to 10 or?
Right. So they'd be at the clock with 10 now. So obviously that spawns a lot of speculation with who they think is going to be there that they're now moving. Trading up for, because obviously 10 is not that high. Something could happen at as high as 4 that kind of shakes everything else up, and right, the guy's not there. But it's speculated that it's going to be Josh Giddey, something like that. He's from Australia, so I find it hard to believe that his last name's Giddey, but it would be very funny if it was. 6'8 guard, he's 18 as well. A lot of young players available in this draft. Really good playmaker already. very skilled. And I've said a couple of the other of these guards or wings who kind of need to develop a three-point shot. I think it would be a disappointment if he doesn't develop into a, like an elite three-point shooter. He has all the skills. He's shown the flashes. Getting in an NBA gym and getting that like shooting coaching, I think he could really be a good shooting guard to small forward, really good size with a good shot. I really like it at 10. It's a good swing for the Grizzlies to take. We'll see if it's worth it to make that trade to move up to get him, though. After that, we go to Kai Jones. I believe we'll be going to the Hornets at 11. Big man out of Texas, 6'11", 220, 20 years old. He's a prospect. It's a little bit of a project, but if he's developed correctly in Charlotte, he's so athletic that he could just be dominant on both ends of the floor. Big lob catching potential out of him with his athleticism, which makes sense to want to pair him with Melo there. And this could be perceived as a reach at the 11th pick at the time, but the Hornets only kind of need a big man. They have so many guards on their roster and good young solid guards at that. And there's not really, he's kind of at this point in the draft, kind of the best big man available. So I think they'll go team need and reach a little bit for Kai Jones, but could be a guy that, you know, in 5 years, it'll be a shock that he went outside of the top five if he can live up to his athletic potential. We're going to the Spurs here at 12. They could really go anywhere. They've been rumored to be moving up, to be trading guys, which has been would be unusual for a Spurs team. Haven't really done that ever. They're also not used to picking this high. But I got him going Moses Moody out of Arkansas, 6'6 shooting guard. Another guy could be a solid 3-and-D guy. These 3-and-D, you know, guard wings are really in vogue right now in the NBA, and he could be exactly that for the Spurs. After that, Pacers. I got him taking the second Gonzaga player off the board with Corey Kispert, small forward. Good shooter. Feels like a very Pacers player. There's not exactly superstar potential there. He's 22, you know, stayed in college for a few years. He's essentially, if Doug McDermott leaves, he's just stepping into those minutes and playing similarly. Feels like a Pacers that are, he's not going to be a guy that's going to, you know, probably not be an all-star. Don't want to put that on a guy before he's even drafted, but is a guy that keeps you around the playoff conversation for the Pacers, which for better or worse feels like something that they're interested in doing every year. And then finally the Warriors with their second pick. If how I predicted they go and take the project with their earlier pick with Jonathan Kuminga, they'll then be with this pick. They'll need to get somebody who can contribute to that team this year. And ideally for them, that would be Davion Mitchell if he's still there. 6'1 guard out of Baylor. Doesn't really need the ball to shoot. He has his limitations, but he's just solid all around. He's going to play good defense. He's going to distribute on a team that can always use more passing. And with a guy who doesn't have the best shot in the draft, if there's ever a team that you can not take a single shot on, it's the Warriors. He can absolutely hide that part of his game, and he'll contribute for them this year for sure. Kind of moving in up some quick trade rumors. I touched on the Cavs. Apparently, reports come out that the Lakers have offered either one or both of Kyle Kuzma and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope to almost every team in the league. They want these guys off the roster so bad. Like, how do you even feel if you're Kyle Kuzma right now?
Yeah, I don't know.
You've been, like, basically off the Lakers for, like, 3 years now. Like, it's right. Very clear they don't want you there. And you've only been getting less opportunities and done nothing with them. Like, he used to be – Kyle Kuzma and Jason Tatum used to be a conversation.
Right.
And now he is. He's worth nothing. He's just – they just want him gone. And so going into that, obviously the big name in trade conversations is Damian Lillard right now. So I looked not necessarily at what I think the best deals would be for teams to go get them, but kind of what are the most likely ones? What are the ones that have buzz around them? And what do I think about them? Obviously, he's been very linked to the Lakers. So I'm like, what does that deal look like for the Lakers? And it looks like it would be Damian Lillard and Robert Covington going to the Lakers for Andre Drummond, KCP, and three future firsts, which, especially Lakers firsts, feels light. Yeah. I don't know if I can take that if I'm the Blazers, and I don't know if the Lakers have the pieces to do much better than that in a deal.
Right. I mean, they've gutted so much of their future with previous trades already that
people will so blindly just be like, well, it's the Lakers. Like, they're going to make a move. Like, if you look at their current cap situation and roster composition, they don't have that much leverage right now. they don't have a point guard. They're about to get fleeced by Dennis Schroeder. He's about to get a bag because they need to have someone be the point guard on that team. And they don't really have that many other options. I mean, unless they're going to reach out and go get like Kyle Lowry, but that's not going to be necessarily cheap either.
Right.
So yeah, they're kind of hamstringed a little bit. I don't really see the Blazers accepting that deal, especially when you have potentially a better package to send them to the other conference from the Knicks. That deal would be just Dame, and the Knicks would send RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, Mitchell Robinson, and three firsts, which the players in that deal are
right
way, way superior to what the Lakers can offer. Like, say what we will about RJ, like, it's just the number two pick. Like, lots of potential still there. I'm definitely way too early to say he's a bust or anything. And take that back as the Blazers. You get Obi Toppin, who's another project, but again, super young player. Mitchell Robinson, you know, he's there. He's definitely a piece. You definitely want him in this deal if he's being offered. Like, that's kind of an instant little core around that. I think that Blazers team still probably flirts with the playoffs in the West.
Right.
And you still get three firsts, which those firsts from, like, the Knicks will be pretty good with Dame. I don't love the deal for them either. I think they're an overachieving team because that's what I'm blanking on their coach's name. That's what, like, I don't see Dame Lillard really fitting that current Knicks team. Like, I guess if you kind of gut it, he gets these teams, he gets them to buy in, and very impressive in the NBA these days, getting team, especially of young players, to buy into a defense, to play really hard and overachieve. But that's what he does. And is that something that at this point in his career Dame Lillard's going to buy into? Like, I think Dame's a great player, a good team guy, but is he going? He's not the hard nosed, like slap the floor defensive guy.
Right.
Like, it instantly becomes just the Dame show, especially if you're shipping RJ Barrett out of town. Like, I just don't think that team, they'll be better than they were this year, but I just don't think there's that much room to grow in the East. Like, they're the four seed. This doesn't put them over the Nets, Bucks, or Sixers. Like, there's not really room for them to go up. I think the team would be better than they were last year, but would they be the four seed again? I think that'd be their ceiling still.
Right.
Yeah, bottom line, that's the deal I see happening, because Dame is not going to play for the Blazers again. For a guy who was like the ultimate hometown team guy for many years, his tune has changed very quickly on that. He's willing to sit out and everything. Yeah, end of the day, I think he's a Nick, and doesn't really scare me as a Bucks fan, to be honest.
No.
But speaking of the top teams in the East, the Sixers are really looking to move Ben Simmons. I've seen a lot of buzz that, like, today is the last day that Ben Simmons is a Sixer. Like, he's moving for the draft. I don't know if that means the Sixers moving up high, or if that just means, you know, that's just kind of the time that deals are coming. But this one is insulting to Ben Simmons. And I'm shocked it's thrown out there, but I've included it just to show how much the market on Ben Simmons has crashed. Sixers said Ben Simmons to the Cavs for Kevin Love and one first in 2022. I wouldn't take, if I was the Sixers, I wouldn't take Kevin Love and a 2022 first for nothing. You have to attach at least two picks to get rid of that contract. And they're basically saying, you know, let's swap these two guys and we'll give you a first because of the age difference.
Right.
What is that? That Sixers team stinks if they get rid of Ben Simmons and it's Joel Embiid and Kevin Love. I don't see it happening, but I included it because it's the fact that it's even being talked about should be a crime, and Ben Simmons should throw up in his mouth if he sees it. But the more realistic one that I kind of like, that still keeps you competitive if you're a Sixers fan and doesn't mess with your rotation too much, it's a risk, but you would send Ben Simmons and George Hill to the Wizards for John Wall and two firsts. So you get a little bit more back in the trade, in the pick category. And John Wall clearly is someone you'd rather have on your team than Kevin Love. He's a little bit older now. You know, he's coming off the big injury, but I think he's way more likely to contribute than Kevin Love is. And he's a player that can share the floor with Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
He's going to score a little bit more, which that's what you needed in the playoffs out of your point guard. Do you think the Sixers with Wall instead of Simmons is better?
No.
I don't think so either, but
you have the added value of future picks.
Future picks. And, I mean, and they're still a top four seed, I think.
Well, and I think if they go get Wall and the Knicks go out and get Dame, I still think that Sixers team beats the Knicks.
I'd agree with that.
Like you were saying, I don't think their standing is going to change.
Right. I don't think they'll be no matter what happens, I don't think they're the one seed again. I think that was kind of above their potential, especially with even if there is a possibility, I think, that Simmons plays game one with the Sixers. I don't think there's really a chance that he ends the season with them. But, yeah, even if he starts with them, I don't really see him being what they were last year. But, yeah, again, not really super scared of them come playoff time. Like, Tobias Harris is going to just dominate in the playoffs. Like, he had some really good games, but, you know, yeah, if putting John Wall and Joel Embiid on the floor at the same time is such an injury risk. Like, you hope to be healthy during the playoffs throughout the season, but with Wall would be a question coming into the season with what he's going to look like. And both of those guys at this point would be like kind of fragile. That would be a big load management team. I think you get several games where it's like, well, hopefully Tobias can win this one for us tonight, because we're not trotting the other two guys out there. But yeah, I'm sure we will see deals tonight made. You know, move it up and down. Probably one blockbuster one. There usually is, you know, stuff in the talks that we don't even know about. Something will come out and surprise us. But yeah, we'll be watching closely tonight and keeping our eyes on the phones for any MLB moves that are made over the next, you know, 36 hours.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I'm really excited for this MLB trade deadline. Mm-hmm. That is the only thing I can't say for football.
Yeah.
It's like, I love the draft way more than the NBA or MLB draft. Mm-hmm. You know, I love the playoffs. I love everything more except the trade deadline.
It's so early.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even really know what your holes in your team are yet. Exactly.
Right. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I feel like it could be changed, but when they got really everything else working for them, they can kind of get over it. But yeah, make sure you fade my picks. You can find those every day at Weekly Winners WI on Twitter. It's Weekly Winners WI on Instagram, Weekly Winners on TikTok. Football season is coming in. Give us, shoot us those lines if you're interested in the fantasy football league. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.